Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
You know, the world didn't end.
I'm not sure.
The sun came up today.
It's looking a little cloudy today.
You know, the name of the show is still The Rad Life versus the once rad life and now miserable life. I want to apologize to everybody who's been waiting for 31 minutes here for us to get on the air, but we, as many places in the country probably right now, are running a little bit behind, you know, trying to evaluate the...
Trying to wrap our heads around
what happened yesterday night and the election and, you know, whether you supported one particular candidate or another. At the end of the day, enough people spoke their choice, and we are where we are, whether you support it or not. And I have a little something that I wrote this morning that I'll share in a minute, but... Look, we need to just stick one step at a time, care of each other, you know, smile, and just deal with it, man. Paul, come back into the room. You know, don't leave. Don't. No, he's like moving to Canada. Right?
Well, it's interesting because why we're delayed is because off air we started a debate with
Paul
the three of us here.
Paul stopped talking, is why.
And there were three of us here, and interestingly enough, we've all voted for somebody different. I voted for Hillary. Rod voted for Bernie, and our guest voted for Trump. And so I'm sitting here trying to wrap my head around what happened, and they're educating me.
Well, and so do you feel educated?
Let me see if I summarize everything.
Wait.
Bring your guest in here so we'll introduce her and everything. Just so she doesn't have to sit here
Chrissy,
quietly.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm with American Old Care Services. I'm the community liaison, and I voted for Trump.
A woman who voted for Trump. The unknown
Did you ever
factor
think
here.
That on the day after the election, we're going to have somebody here who's going to say that in your ear?
No, not at all. So what I heard was she voted for Trump because Hillary was worse. Right?
Exactly.
And it wasn't that you liked Trump, but you hated Hillary.
Exactly.
And the question I posed to you is, I get why you hate Hillary, but why Trump? I mean, there were 17 other people. How did we end up with him as the champion for your cause here?
It was more about a movement. We're tired of the corruption. We wanted something better, less government.
And why do we think who's maybe he's the most squeaky clean guy in the world, or maybe he's a corrupt developer who's cut a million shady deals along the way. I don't know. But what is it about him, other than the fact he spoke to this anger, that convinced you he was for real? That he wasn't corrupt, or that he wasn't... I mean, look at all the stuff he did, the tapes about women and all that kind of stuff. That was supposedly going to drive all women away from him. It did not.
No, it didn't. And it was about, again, it was about the movement. It was about the lack of media coverage for both candidates. We didn't get the whole story of Hillary. We only got bits and parts of something that happened 10 years ago. And it, again, it's about the movement. It's about the getting away from government. And
now, what you said, I think, was the most interesting thing. You said so Rod's been very vocal about his support for Bernie, and if he's not going to vote for Bernie, he's not voting for anybody. I take it you didn't vote for Hillary. Did you hold your nose and vote for Hillary?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
You didn't vote for Hillary. So
have you seen my nose? I don't hold my nose.
So what, okay. You just didn't vote for anybody?
No.
Or what did you do on your ballot when it's...
No, I voted for Bernie.
Oh, so you wrote his name.
I said it months ago. I told people, I do not, anybody who doesn't believe me can ask my mother, I do not like being told what to do.
Yes.
So if you're going to tell me I got Hillary and Donald only to pick from.
I'll prove
and,
you.
And one is a coronation, you know, but that attitude
right.
is exactly what happened this election. Okay? People were not going to be told what to do.
Yes.
People on the side.
That's true.
Let's just step back for a minute, okay? I live down in the South Orange County, okay? It is... And I mean this not in a derogatory manner, but it's the boilerplate of the Republican Party. Okay,
yeah,
I mean, it's pretty
old,
much where
old Republican
the largest, I mean,
territory.
The only thing missing is we built fences around our communities and have boiling oil on top of
it. It's where Richard
walls,
Nixon
right?
lived, for Pete's
right.
sake.
Okay,
yeah,
it doesn't get more. Right? Richard Nixon literally was in the backyard, right?
Yeah, right.
So, okay, But over the last 10 years, there has been an attrition from the Republican Party. People have left the Republican Party, and the Democrats actually started to believe that their party is bigger. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the case. What was happening is people were leaving the Republican Party to the independent side of things.
Right.
Okay, they do not tell me what to think. Do not basically consider I'm going to drink your Kool-Aid just because I have an R or a D on my shirt.
Right.
Okay, that wasn't going to fly anymore. Right. And we saw the result of it. And then when the Democrats basically affirmed what Chrissy was saying, affirmed the fact that there was this corruption and systemic issues with the government and how it is, regardless which side of the aisle it is, when that Democratic convention happened in July,
money and influence and all that kind
of
stuff.
And basically it became blatant that the only other person speaking with the same kind of anger at what and how middle-class America and working America has been treated, okay,
right,
on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders, okay, that Trump was echoing and connecting with the same sentiment, by
yes,
the way, right, and just in a different manner.
And when,
okay,
and when he was the only one left standing saying that,
and
Trump.
And Bernie Sanders was literally basically undermined blatantly by the Democratic Party, that, you know, to the point where, and I'm sorry, and I said this on the show at the time, when the person who was instrumental in the undermining of Bernie's campaign then gets basically assigned as an advisory to the Clinton campaign, what more corruption do you want to actually have evidence of?
Well, but
the only person standing was Donald speaking to that.
But let me clarify.
Audience.
The party can pick whoever they want. There is no rule that says a party even has to have.
You
want to
put money on the table how quickly the superdelegate is going to be disbanded?
Okay, but I'm just saying they put the superdelegates in place to prevent a Trump from rising. The Republicans wish they had the Republican leaders wish they had superdelegates. They would have stopped Trump. This notion that
replace it with what? They had nothing.
For centuries we did backroom dealing. There was no even primary. They picked, the leaders picked, the representatives, the leaders of a party get to pick whoever they want to put forward. Then we, the people, can vote for them or vote for none of them. This idea that somehow parties have to democratically elect their leaders is only a recent phenomenon since the 60s or 70s, really. Jimmy Carter was really the first one to take that wave and run with it here, where he came out of nowhere and won Iowa and started winning the primaries. And then it got so that they were concerned that you're going to have a populist candidate rise up who's going to whip the people up and is going to take the party in another direction. That's exactly what happened.
So, Chrissy, what do you think? I mean,
the point I want to make is she said that had she had the opportunity to vote for Bernie, she would have voted for Bernie. A lifelong Republican would have voted for Bernie.
I would have considered.
Well, okay.
But absolutely, because I was, like I said, I'm sick of the system.
Couldn't consider the Clintons part of the old corruption, the money, influence, power peddling, all this kind of stuff,
right,
and influence peddling, and Donald Trump, somehow he's just not part of the system, so maybe he'll be different. It wasn't that you liked him, and you might have gone for Bernie. So I say
so
publicly.
I'm curious as far as the time frame, okay? Because I mean, this has been the longest friggin' circus act on the planet, right? 2 years
ever.
Right? But when did you make that shift? When did you say,
I'm going to hold my nose.
It's not about holding the nose. I'm not going to even put it that way. When did you say, Chrissy, that okay, I'm considering Bernie, but now I'm going to vote for Trump? Was it after the convention?
Yes, it was after the convention because
right,
I didn't want Hillary to win.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And believe you me, if you look at the other side and what I had friends that were delegates at the Democratic mm-hmm, National Convention, right, in Philadelphia. They actually were booed. They had signs that was, you know, like Islamic or, you know, equality for Palestinians, whatever. And there were signs that went up in front of them. Okay, there was blocking that happened.
But that happens in every political party.
No,
it's always about trying to control.
You cannot come across as inclusive,
right,
if you basically are doing that. And to Chrissy's point, and more so than even 2008. Like 2008,
but
I
who
think
had
we started
a more inclusive?
Who
had a more inclusive convention, the Democrats or the Republicans? The Republican, Ted Cruz, stood up and said, I can't even support the nominee. I mean, that's never happened that's never happened in any
political
convention.
Well, I think part of that is also Ted Cruz's own personal ambitions, okay?
Well, he was hoping that Trump would fail and then he could say, I stood up.
Yeah, so let's not forget that. And to be honest, you know, if I had to pick between the two of them, okay, I would pick Trump.
Wow.
Because Ted Cruz is a nightmare.
So both of you feel this anger towards the system, this anger towards the elites, the media, the powers that be, the big business interests, that triangle of big business, big money, big media, and power and influence that somehow has done what?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look at Obamacare. And working in the medical field,
right.
I see these smaller, medical facilities, hospice companies, home health companies.
You have
companies.
To talk, like I'm here, just talking to the mic here.
Yeah.
The smaller companies, well, the thing is, with all these regulations and with Obamacare, they can't survive. And the only people who can survive are the bigger corporations. And there's a loss of human contact. It's the people. It becomes harder for the American dream to come true.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Since we are, you are in the care industry, right?
Right.
Because
just describe what you do so we know.
Yeah.
I'm a community liaison with American All Care Services. I supervise hospice nurses, and we provide caregiving services for end of life.
And Chrissy, share a little bit about the company.
We've been around for 20 years. We started out in L.A., and now we have an office in Tustin, and I manage the office in Tustin, where we provide great service.
What kind of
services do you provide?
We do caregiving services, in-home caregiving services. We anywhere from RNs to LVNs, CNAs, CHHAs.
And the only requirement is what? That's that a doctor has said that this is end of life?
For our hospice services, yes, they have to have a diagnosis of 6 months or less.
6 months or less to live. Yeah. And then who pays for it if they get that diagnosis? Because it's not covered by Medicare. Is it covered by private insurance? Is it covered by long-term health?
Are you talking specifically about hospice, or are you talking about in-home care?
The in-home care that you guys provide. I just want to walk through that, make sure I understand. So somebody gets a diagnosis, I have 6 months or less to live. Then they call you guys up, and you can provide assistance through that last phase, that hospice care.
Right. Well, we have a department that deals specifically with hospice companies who we provide the nurses for, but we also have caregivers that we can provide to you, and it's a contract between us and the client, and it can be private insurance, it could be private pay. There's a multitude of ways.
And I'm not trying to be difficult, but one of the things we talked about here, maybe I'm being difficult today because I'm just so angry, is that more and more of us are going to need these services. We're going to live longer than we ever have as a generation. And yet, we don't have the money to pay for those last years of our lives. We haven't saved for it. We don't have long-term health care and insurance. So without some sort of government subsidy, assistance, or program or whatever, how do you pay for these things? Because I'm assuming it can be expensive, right?
Yes, it can be very expensive.
So how do people... They're obviously refinancing their houses or type of that. But like my aunt, I bring up this case all the time. My aunt is in need of your services right now. She's 92, but she only has a tiny little pension. She gets $2,500 a month.
Which is a very common scenario with a lot of people.
Very common.
Yes.
She doesn't have any children. She doesn't have a house. Mm-hmm. And she has her total income is $2,500 a month. So how does she – and she right now lives alone in an apartment and can't continue to do so but can't afford to go anywhere else. She can't afford to pay for in care. She hasn't been diagnosed with 6 months or less to live, but she's not poor enough to go on Medi-Cal, but she's not nearly enough to pay for assisted living, independent living, or at-home services like yours. So what does she do? And people like her, what do they do?
She needs to get in contact with the right people, and there's creative ways of retaining services like ours. So we are not a fit for everybody, but we can help assist people getting to the right people that can help her in that situation.
Because I think that was the hope of Obamacare. I don't know if it was the delivery of it, but the hope was that there are too many people without health insurance, one, or too many people who can't get health insurance because they have a pre-existing condition and therefore are facing bankruptcy because they've got years and years of bills. Companies have cut back on benefits, so most companies don't give you benefits anymore. You can't either qualify for them because you have a pre-existing condition or you can't afford them, and then you've got at this last stage of your life, you've run out of money.
But there was another thing that was part of that equation,
okay? Right.
And it was a lot, especially in California. We have not been talking about it lately, but we used to talk about it all the time.
Okay,
which is that the medical system absorbed a lot of people that did not have insurance. And the idea was that if you had more people insured, that you would basically distribute the cost insurance. Now,
right. So we're going to force everybody to get insurance, and that'll spread the cost around.
But the ideal side of that was that it would somehow reduce medical costs.
Right.
What happened is because of the way it was structured. Okay.
You're talking about Obamacare.
Yes, with the goal to basically provide everybody with the chance or insist on them being insured.
Right.
Okay. It partnered with the same people that were also in control of the price range.
It didn't seem to bend the cost curve much.
Right. No. So that's why yesterday night, when we basically had a president-elect declared, the market took a dive.
Right.
And then this morning, the market is up 90 points at about 8 o'clock in the morning because all the pharmaceutical companies, basically, stocks went through the roof.
Right.
It's at 200 points.
Yeah, now it's like 200 points, right? So here, but with all of that, okay, and it shows you kind of the amount of complexities that's involved here and the need that isn't being met, right?
Right.
I'm going to ask you this, Chrissy. Okay, so we have, the reality is, we have this population of people that are aging.
And need services, and can't afford them. Huge
influx of people that are in that age bracket, right? It's not even as small. It's like 78 million people in this country,
and they
right?
cannot afford private
health
insurance.
And most of them, because of the economic downturn, and you can blame it on...
Whatever.
You know, well, no, but let's talk about it. You can blame it on outsourcing of jobs.
Big part.
And I don't think you can blame one party or the other only on
everybody
that.
Everybody joined in on that party. Yeah.
Both complicit in that, right?
Right.
The loss of jobs, the loss of value of portfolios... Family income, family savings, all of this stuff, right, that then basically found a lot of people in a position where their net worth is lower when they needed it the most.
And we're baby boomers.
And
we didn't save like we're supposed to have.
Right.
We live for today. We didn't save like our World War II parents did.
And to be honest, you voted you voted for today. And that's, I think, what happened, because a lot of people did exactly what they do as a baby boomer. They responded and reacted for the now.
Right.
They didn't respond and react what's going to be like in 20 years. Besides, the way you guys, you know, now with the illegalization of marijuana, you're going to be around. I think if there's anything that's going to keep you guys around is the fact that you can now recreationally use it in California without any issue. Right? I mean, I expect people, like, when we go down the street, I was looking for people today rolling on the side of the street.
Smoking a J as they're walking down the street.
Is there a timeline before it actually comes into effect?
Yeah, probably January 1st.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. What happens if people start earlier? You know, it's party time, right?
Are people going to just light up at
Man, I don't like the results of this election. I'm going to light up right now. You know,
I've had people say that to me already. Yeah,
I'll just postpone my ticket. You know, I'll just go to court after it comes into effect.
And there's one other part you got to take into effect. And this is something none of us maybe we'd looked at, but nobody ever asked us, and we never voted on this. Corporations like the one that employed my aunt. My aunt worked for Hartford Insurance for 40 years. She was a secretary, 45 years. In those days, even the secretary got a little pension. The problem is this. It's very simple. My aunt retired after 45 years there. She's now 92. They've been paying her for another 45 years.
Yep.
She's been getting that little pension and insurance for 45 years. They didn't factor that into the equation.
Yeah.
And so they've all decided slowly over the last 10 years, no more. We're not going to give you a pension or health insurance. We're pushing that back on you. And let me just finish this. So there's only... Health insurance can only be paid for one of three ways. Either the company pays for it, which is what it was after World War II, or you pay for it, which we can't afford to do because of the skyrocketing costs and our lack of savings and preparation for this, partly our fault, partly the thing getting away from us, or the government pays for it like they do in Europe. And I don't know why we can't just look at it in that simple nuts and bolts thing. It's got to be one of the three. Somebody's got to pay for it. Because otherwise what happens is you've got millions of people like my aunt who are struggling day to day, eking out a living, trying to figure out how to make it through the next day.
Well,
it comes down to priorities. Our priorities in our government are screwed up.
Okay.
But let's not – give me a second.
Before
you move on, okay, give me a second. You're talking about pensions.
Okay. And health care.
But you're talking pensions, right?
Both of them.
Okay. And you just defined exactly the situation. Somebody like your aunt, okay, who is in need at this point in her life,
right?
Who's likely to live longer than the actuary tables told her.
Already has, right?
Okay. Needs that.
Right.
And yet, on the other side, we're talking about how basically the whole system is a disaster because we just basically are held captive by these, you know, unions and pension plans and all this stuff, okay? All right, fine. So you want to gripe and whine and complain.
Right.
Right? Well, guess what?
You mean companies want to gripe
right.
and
complain? No. But there's certain people. Like, I mean, there's people that basically, we got to cut down the pensions so we can make things more affordable.
Right.
Yeah, but when you cut down the pensions, you're basically cutting out people like your aunt.
Right.
Okay? So what's the alternative? If you want to cut down the cost
exactly.
and basically government is too bloated and all this stuff, then what's your alternative? And here is where the rubber meets the road, and here where the next 2 years are going to be extremely interesting.
Yes, right.
Okay?
Because right now,
you can no longer ride on the fact that you're complaining about the status quo. You got the House, you got the Senate, and you got the White House. And the spotlight is on you. You can't blame anybody else anymore.
You're
Republican
looking at the
Party.
Only Republican
no,
in the
I'm
room,
looking.
Right?
I'm looking at. I'm looking at her because she's my guest and sitting across the table from me. I'm also looking at you.
I can take it.
Right? Right. No, because look, I'm an economics major. Okay,
right.
The only party I was ever registered to, or was the Republican Party. Right. What drove me nuts and drove me away from the party is this myopic way of looking at stuff, okay? And you know the party.
What's good for business is good for the world,
right? But what was shielding the party, okay? Especially over the last decade, is that you could always fall back and say, "Well, we don't really have control to do what we want."
Yeah,
guess what?
Yeah, you do now. And so let me
November 9th, 2016.
So let me.
You
just,
better basically be putting plans come January
right.
because in 2 years from now it may be looking at a complete disaster.
I agree. So let me just finish this then. So you're a lifelong Republican, and our other lifelong Republicans living. We live in still a heavily Republican county.
But
although
you're like 20.
It's not majority.
I mean.
20?
Yeah, aren't you 20?
She was a Republican for
like
3 years.
Yeah.
She's only done this twice. Yeah, exactly.
Twice that. but thank you.
So, Donald Trump and everybody in the Republican Party says repeal and replace. Okay, repeal it. Let's say I'll agree. Let's say it's a bad idea. It didn't work. And what really didn't work, even though it was a Republican plan that was put forth by the Heritage Foundation and once supported by Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney and others, it was a market-based plan, was just what you said. If we get enough healthy people in, we can offset these additional costs of the sick people that we're going to have.
If you have enough young people working in a community, their taxes go into paying
right.
for the seniors. Well, the people along the coast communities of Orange County, the young are moving to the Inland
yeah.
Empire, and the seniors
and the
are
failure
there,
was pretty obvious.
And the big places are built out, so you don't have any more real estate money coming in. That's what I mean.
But
okay,
so
you guys, you know, government asked for this.
I know. So
right?
let me just finish. So obviously, what failed in I think we'd call and agree on this with the Obama plan was it didn't control costs in any way, shape, or form. It didn't put
right.
caps on costs like Medicare does. So it wasn't truly a controlling program, and they didn't get enough young people to sign up to pay for all the old people. The cost of the old people and the sick people that all did take it, the 20 million or so that got covered by this, it was so skyrocketing that now the premiums are going to go through the roof because it's just too expensive to have those people without the healthy young people. So if that didn't work, that market-based plan that originally was a Republican plan and then adopted by the Democrats, you've either got Bernie's plan, which is Medicare for everybody. I don't know how we pay for it, but Medicare for everybody like they do in Europe. And everybody seems to think, even Republicans, even all my late great father would say, I hate socialism, but don't take away my Social Security. Or don't take away my Medicare, which is socialized medicine for poor old people.
Well, you can't run a government like a business. Okay, there is a certain aspect of the social contract, there's a civil contract, the government contract with the citizens, that requires expenditure and looking out for certain people in the country.
My aunt is
okay.
a lifelong Republican. She held her nose and voted for Trump, and she'd be the first to say, don't take away Medicare. She's the first one to say, don't give the government any more power because they can't run anything right. But don't take away Medicare because they run that right.
Right. And some of the services that Medicare offers is amazing.
It's worked. It's kept costs down, and it's insured old people, and it's still financially solvent.
Our problem is the inflation on medical costs
right.
by, you know,
You can say
industry.
It here.
Yeah. And has anybody really...
the pharmaceutical company? It's,
yeah.
it's crazy.
When a drug is 50... My aunt takes a drug... to keep her alive, once a month she gets a Procrit shot that helps create red blood cells because she has a type of cancer that kills her red blood cells. Mm-hmm. And 20 years ago, literally 20 years ago, almost to the day, she was diagnosed with 5 years to live. She's been able to live 20 years instead of five because of
amazing.
This miraculous drug. Procrit. Now, Procrit costs $1,500 every time she takes one.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So, and she has to go get into a doctor's office every week to get her blood tested and monitored and everything else. She sees doctors every week. She must cost millions and millions of dollars to keep alive. And people are starting to wonder, can we afford to do that?
Yeah, it's crazy. But when
really?
It's our system, and it's what's in place, and it's the there needs, I'm against big government, but at the same time, there needs to be regulation on pricing for medical costs. I lived in India for a while.
Wow.
I was in a third world country, mm-hmm. and I had cancer in my late 20s.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And I have to get a blood test every so often, and
right.
I have to have my medication and stuff like that. So what was I going to do when I'm out there?
Yeah.
I didn't need a doctor's prescription to go get my blood work done. It
right.
cost me $3 or $4.
Yeah.
My results were emailed to me by the end of a day. In a third world country. And I went to the pharmacy, and I got the medication, and it was done.
Yeah.
And it was so smooth, and it was so nice.
So is the corruption
surprising.
Then in... So let's try and narrow in on a problem, a source of it. Businesses says we can't afford to do this anymore. You're living for 40 years. It's too expensive, so it's on you now.
Right.
Okay? And people say, well, either one, I can't afford it, or two, I can't get it because I already got something. I'm screwed either way. So along comes the government and says, well, they do it in other places, Canada and Europe. We'll take Medicare, that's a successful program, keeps costs down, and we'll somehow extend it down. Everybody says, no, that's socialized medicine. We can't do that. Government, big government, blah, blah, blah. And everybody goes up in arms. So they adopt this market-based system, and the market-based system isn't working. It hasn't controlled costs. Premiums are going up, and they haven't gotten enough healthy people to young people principally to buy in, even with the threat of fines or whatever. So what is the alternative? When Republicans like Trump say repeal and replace, not once have I ever heard anybody say with what?
Well, guess what? they got to come up with something now.
Right.
Right.
I don't know how.
I mean, you're talking about in India, right? Now, you're an expat in India, right?
Right.
Okay. But did you fall on, because India's health care is a universal health care system.
Yeah, they do have a universal health care system.
So what you weren't an Indian, so you couldn't qualify for it.
Well,
that's why I was asking.
If you go to the hospital, yeah, you're taken care of. But for normal doctor's visits and stuff like that, you do have to pay out of pocket.
Right. But you're saying it was
so. You're
was
saying you're
so
saying
much cheaper.
The
yeah.
cost of it out of pocket,
right.
as not really being a participant in the universal health care system, was that at that cost, that price point, and that efficiency.
Yeah.
That you shared.
Okay. Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. So you know, is it the bureaucracy? I mean,
it's the regulatory system that we
yeah.
have in place. It's like our caregiving services. You know, the regulations went into in January 1st. We were actually following those policies that were in place just to. For the liability reasons, but
right.
once we had to have them,
right.
our costs went up because now we have to prove that we've had these policies and procedures in place, and therefore now the cost is being
with
our customers.
And Chrissy, what you're talking about is the added regulation or that's became law.
Mm-hmm.
Relevant to care agencies.
Right.
And it was last year.
Yeah.
Or just earlier this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you'd have to admit, because there were certainly lots of documented cases, that there were health care agencies that were employing felons or wacky people. I mean, that because it was an unregulated field, you didn't know what you were getting.
But is it really regulation? I mean, here's the thing, right? We always talk about regulation. But we seem to always fail about talking about enforcement.
Exactly.
Right. If you're gonna have rules on the books, that's fine.
Right.
But if you don't enforce those rules on the books, you're gonna have 15 times the number of rules on the books. You're still not enforcing them. Right. So do we have a problem of enforcement and not really a problem of regulation? I don't know that I have an answer, but I think in some cases that may be exactly
yeah.
the case.
Well, clearly there are those, you know, you go to the other hot button issue, immigration these days. I mean, it's still illegal to be here illegally.
I think we just accepted that we need a police state, is
yeah,
what
right.
we just said, right?
But I just really don't think this conversation is being had by anybody. They finally, what was amazing to me is when Obama ran against McCain, they really weren't that far apart in health care. McCain wanted to do a few other little things, but he never said no, absolutely no health care coverage. And Obama took what was Mitt Romney's plan, which was adopted in Massachusetts, which was this market-based plan. Immediately, the Republicans turned and portrayed that as a government takeover, which it wasn't, of government insurance, which it wasn't. It was a subsidy to help you pay for this private insurance if you couldn't do it, but it was, it's not provided by the government. The government's not running it like Medicare. It wasn't a government-run program. And I know they did that for political reasons, but it played so big in the Midwest, where I'm from, in these small towns in the Midwest, this idea of government overreach, of government bureaucracy. And yet, they love the government program, the socialist programs that were put in place in the 1940s by the Democrats, Social Security and Medicare. Those two programs are socialized, spread the risk, government pays for everybody.
But, Paul, I think that duality is part of human nature, and it's always going to be there. I think what happened, what you're describing, is an attempt to say whatever it takes, okay, to dissuade people from supporting another side. Okay, right. And I think it's that disingenuousness and that lack of substance,
right,
okay, that really people were reacted against this time around. I think they were just sick and tired of all politicians being politics as usual. And I think I didn't see it, and I don't think it was done intentionally, but I think the Republican Party probably did themselves the biggest favor as the entrenched leadership of the party by getting out of the way, because they immediately removed themselves from the target area.
You mean with this Trump phenomenon?
Right. They didn't support, whatever.
Not going to support, but I'm not going to go
right,
against
but they,
them.
We're they just, got out of the limelight.
Right.
They stopped being a public challenge of any sorts, right? Where we're at today, okay, people are just sick and tired. And whether you like what he was saying or not,
it's the Howard Beale party.
He was telling you what he was telling you.
Yes. And people, but was
there was no spin. You didn't like what I was saying, fine, it's up to you, but I was not spinning.
But you're all assuming that he's telling you this because he really believes it, and not just because he wants to get
elected. Oh, no, I don't believe
it. Because 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, he said something radically different on abortion. He was for a single payer health care system not long ago. He was for abortion not long ago. He was a Democrat 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's found religion, yeah, and he's been converted, and we're supposed to believe that this billionaire, who's never done anything for anybody but himself...
Donald Trump told you everything you need to know about him.
He told you everything you wanted to hear.
No. He told you everything you need to know about him in The Art of the Deal, which was required reading in business school in the 80s.
Okay, which is?
Okay.
That you say you're doing
it
anything.
It is about closing the deal.
Right. You say you're doing anything.
You do whatever you need to do to close the deal.
Right.
Now, if that person has that trait and that's the only trait that guides them, okay, is put in a position where they can affect trade, they can affect things of that nature. I'm actually kind of okay with that, because for 8 years we've had a stalemate and nothing getting done.
So do you?
But like
think
I said, the proof is going to be in the pudding, and now you have nothing that you can claim
so
is resisting or stopping
something.
You from delivering.
Because I'm telling, and this was, we'll get a little off of this, but we said this off camera, off mic, and I thought this was another interesting thing.
Where I was right? Is that what you're talking to?
You were right.
You said we were both right.
We were both right about Bernie. I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that Americans, or Republicans in particular, would vote for an old white guy that looked like your grandpa that called himself a socialist. Never. And yet, what's clear is he would have been a better choice than Hillary, because she had so much baggage and so much connection with this, even if it's not corrupt, this feeling of corruption, there's too much influencing, which has been politics forever. I slap your back, you slap mine, I slip you some money, I do you a favor, all that stuff has been going on since the dawn of time here in politics.
I mean, it was even rampant in the Republican Party.
Both parties. This is not something anybody invented.
Where there's power, politics, there's corruption.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, Bernie and Trump both tapped into that anger of we're tired of the system and money and everything else. I still want to know why you think a billionaire is going to change this. A billionaire who is brought up in that class, who admits that he gave money to both sides to make deals, who admits he'll say and do anything to get the deal done. Why do we think he's a man of honor? And
it's not a matter of being a billionaire. It's a matter of how he became a billionaire. How did he get there?
He's
a smart enough man to surround himself. It's not a one-man show. He surrounds himself by the right people, and I think he's going to do that. I mean, look at Mike Pence. I have a lot of faith in Mike Pence.
Okay, but what about when he went bankrupt because he overreached? and the banks, and everybody will say this, the banks bailed him out because they didn't want to take all these properties back and take his name off them because then they would have no value. So they propped him up and allowed, they put him on a, they literally put him on a monthly allowance and said, here's how much money you
can
get.
Can I make a prediction for 2018?
I mean, he didn't do well.
I'm sorry, 2020. I'm going to make a prediction for 2020, we're going to have a field day for the next 4 years. Okay, there's going to be just stuff like, you're going to be like, I don't need to turn on reality television, right? I'm just going to be watching this
soap opera.
Look out your window.
Right, it's like, it'd be like, bam, right? Okay. Some of it is going to be like ridiculous. Some of it is going to be success stories, okay? Overall, things are going to trot along. Okay,
yes,
and these issues, these big issues we're talking about, this, how do we pay for our aging population? How do we provide, you know, fair and adequate services to people? How do we take care of, how do we balance
how do we deal with the changing America?
But it's changing. It's not about how we deal with it. It's how do we come to terms with it. It ain't going to change. It's going that way.
But you haven't been in the Midwest.
It doesn't matter.
Donald Trump says he's going to change it.
It can't. You can't because you have...
Look at Obama. Look what everything he...
He said change and hope.
The only thing he brought into place was Obamacare. That's it.
That's pretty much
and
it.
And when he was around campaigning, he made everything sound so simple.
Okay,
what did he accomplish besides
Obama? So here's
Obamacare?
The interesting... I got to make this point.
And in the same way, that's what Trump did. So again...
Exactly.
But here's the point then. If this is just more talk and hot air, the people in the Midwest that I know very well, these small towns that turned out and voted for him overwhelmingly, mm-hmm. aren't going to accept that, well, he said that, but he didn't really mean it. They really do think he's going to build a wall. Nobody in this room does.
Mm-mm.
They really do think he's going to round up 10 million Mexicans and try and forcibly remove them. Mm-hmm. Nobody in this room, they think that's just talk.
Mm-hmm.
They really do think he's going to put up trade barriers to bring jobs back to the Midwest, to force factories to come back. None of you think he's going to do that.
Oh, I can't wait for that extra tax for companies that move overseas. I want to see that one.
And they really, really, honestly do think that he's going to repeal Obamacare.
It'll just change.
Yeah.
It'll just change.
As far as the trade is concerned, I hope there's some type of adjustment to it, a responsible trade.
Okay, but here's the bottom line, Chrissy. I mean, I'm sorry to be just sort of like very pragmatic business, okay? There is a reason why jobs go overseas.
Cheap labor.
Right. There's a reason why companies, including Trump's, send jobs overseas.
Cheap
because their shareholders are basically demanding
more profit.
Higher profit range margins, right? That's not going to change.
No.
But if we reduce the taxes.
For what?
For the corporations that bring in those.
They're still there. If you reduce, if my savings is 50% on cost of production and you reduce my taxes by 25%, I'm still moving. Even if you charge me 15% extra tax, because the numbers don't pencil out.
And here's the lie of this, that you're going to bring the money
so
back.
That cannot in its own be the solution. You got to educate and change the working force to basically get them up to speed. That requires infusion of money from the government.
And probably more robotics.
Efficient, and strategically sustainable programs that are put in place.
Robotics, less people, more machines. So here's the lie of this, that there's billions.
We're a senior show. You got boomers and seniors that are looking at encore careers at the age of 70.
Because they need the money.
And they're going to colleges, like community colleges, not to basically learn how to basically macrame and do friggin', you know, pottery. They're basically going there to learn how to basically get a skill set or maybe even shift into a nonprofit sector or something like that. Because they're looking not only in terms of financially needing to do this, even when they don't need to financially do this, they still feel that they can be productive for the next 15 or 20 years of their life.
Play golf
and they don't
want
to just friggin' go play golf all day long.
And let me just address this one other thing.
What is in place for that, even?
I'm going to say this.
Go ahead, Paul.
This is lie.
Ignore him. He's just an angry boomer.
Started
in the corner.
With Reagan, who I know is an idol on the right, and this whole idea that
I voted for Reagan twice.
If you reduce,
I voted for Obama twice.
If you're old enough for Reagan,
yeah, that's right. You're like
she's only 20.
She's 20. Yeah.
If you reduce taxes,
I wasn't old enough
businesses,
for Reagan. Hold on. Where's my walker,
Grandpa?
Jesus.
If you reduce taxes, the businesses will have more money, and they will automatically reinvested. That has been proven over and over again to be a lie. because it's basic economics. They only invest in new factories if there's demand. If there's no increased demand, that extra profit that you have now either gets distributed and people put more in the bank and buy bigger houses, and or they buy other businesses, which doesn't make jobs, but let's go buy all our competitors. Hey, we're Apple. We got $3 billion in the bank. Let's go buy up other companies and do things here. They do not take, and if you let them expatriate and bring the money back over, they'll be happy. They'll have it here. But there's no evidence that they'll invest it in new jobs because there's no demand. The demand is still weak. You're not going to go build new shoe factories if nobody's buying more shoes. You're going to say, thank you for taxing me less. I'll pay myself more. We'll distribute more dividends. We'll buy more companies. But we're not going to invest in new equipment because there's no demand. The demand has to come, and then we need it. If the demand suddenly jumped up, it'd be great if they had the money.
No, see, that's one form of business, okay? The other form of business is you to generate the demand. And that is innovation, and that is development of new sectors. Yes, it does.
That doesn't take.
But more importantly than money, it takes the right kind of visionary leadership.
Well, sure.
Okay? And I'm not saying that that comes from government, but when you have
startups.
Let's go back to what we were talking about in terms of just the shift in demographics in the coastal side of Orange County.
Right.
When you have the young people leaving because they can't afford to live in places like San Clemente and San Juan,
all of Orange County, they can't live.
And they're moving to the Inland Empire, which is ironically the exact opposite role of before, where the seniors moved to the desert. Now
right.
It's the millennials moving to the desert.
Right.
Okay,
that's
what
happening.
You lose as communities is not just the income stream of those people and the taxes from employment taxes from the young people that traditionally has paid for senior services. You also lose these people that could be potential leaders, innovators, business leaders, whatever, in those communities. Born and raised there but can't live there. Okay, when we basically stick our head in our sand.
But reducing taxes doesn't help any of that.
But when we stick our head in the sand and basically don't want to talk about affordable housing or some sort of programs that basically encourage entrepreneurial
and
startups, right?
Here. That doesn't sound,
no,
that's
but,
not about
but,
reducing
but you're, but
taxes
you're,
to business.
I have a reason why I'm going down this path.
Okay,
the reason is because last week I was having the same conversation with somebody.
Yes.
And they said, you're absolutely right. We finally kind of like, got our head out of our proverbial backside, and now we're like basically seeing clearly, because of the fresh air of the ocean breezes or whatever. I don't know. But the point is,
it's the marijuana.
And hey, now we can really imagine stuff, right? But here's what they said. They said, we are just going to have to stop talking about affordable housing. And I said, really? Like, that's going to, I said, no. We'll continue to talk about the topic. We just have to call it work housing. Or work-live housing. So now, it's going back to that sort of Obamacare, we're going to change the label on the dang thing. We're going to make it like we're the ones who are basically fashioning this.
But how does reducing taxes?
And we're going to come up with something that somebody else is going to have a problem with down the road.
How does reducing business taxes, though, or corporate income solve affordable housing?
Here's the thing. And again, this is kind of Reagan economics, right?
It just makes houses more expensive.
But it's Reagan economics, right? It's the trickle-down economics theory, which I do not believe works its own.
In principle,
yes, but you got to basically somehow enforce where that extra money that is now not – the assumption is free will determine spending that money in the right way towards sustainable long-term goals.
Right.
Growing economy, training people, increasing
– I've got more money.
You
I'm going to go buy a bigger
you
house.
Know, the reality is I'm going to go buy that yacht in Balboa Bay Club and park it over there. And during the recession, I can't buy it on my own, so I'll get a couple of other friends of mine that basically have the extra money, and we'll all share it.
And in fact, here,
so there's nothing that's in place that ensures that happens.
So
if you're going to basically push for trickle-down economics, sorry, Paul, but if you're going to push down for trickle-down economics,
you're
going to poo-poo trickle-down economics, you have to provide what is the next step. What happens after the day? We talked about this before, right? Everybody builds the election to election day. Everybody tears at each other like crazy, and nobody talks about, what happens the day after when I have to sit at that council with two people that basically I was running against, and one of them won and the other one didn't, and I really basically just lambasted the heck out of that person that's not sitting next to me, within elbow. He could basically just smack me on the side of my face. What happens when that's a congressman? What happens when
what happens when it's Paul Ryan and Donald Trump?
But that is the nature. That is the nature of our culture.
Yeah.
That's the nature of our culture.
Okay, but so let's
We duke it out.
But
okay?
You
this is the Teddy Roosevelt riding the moose
But you just
country,
jumped over
right?
a thing, and I can't let you jump over this. So the point was raised by
the
Republicans.
Free country. I can jump over if I want.
No, yeah. Screw you. I can tell you what to do. I can turn the mic off. No. Here's what.
Oh,
ultimate power here.
Media. Institutionalized
if
media.
If you give people, wealthy people, more money, you reduce their taxes. The assumption is they'll go take that money and invest it to make more money. Well, they might, but only if there's a demand. If there's no demand, then they're going to park the money.
And there's no guarantee it's going to be invested in this country. It could
be
invested overseas.
That's the other thing.
Exactly.
And the problem is this. So if I don't invest it, I got the money sitting there, I've got extra money, what am I going to do? I'm going to go buy that house down the street. Well, it drives up the prices of those houses, which is what's happened. Orange County real estate has been driven up to record heights because there's a handful of people with a lot of money bidding these prices up over and over and over and over again, which only drives out the millennials. So you have exacerbated the situation if you give rich people more money in their pocket and they don't have any place to invest it because there's no demand. You got to create the demand.
But I don't think you can generalize like that. It's not every person
true.
That
but
does that.
But if you look at the whole cyclical evolution of
right.
economics, every time there's a crash, there's a bigger separation between rich and poor.
Right.
And we're seeing it, and it's every
time. The only time that has closed, and the only time we've grown American middle class was, I'm sorry to say, with the manufacturing middle-class jobs that we created out of the factories.
Where, during what period, Paul?
The 50s and the 40s and the 50s.
What was
what
was happening? What caused that boom?
War.
Exactly.
But we suddenly needed, and I saw it in Detroit. You saw these. I'm not a big union fan because I think they demand too much and for too little in return, and they drive the companies out of business. That's what they kind of did with the car companies. But on the other hand,
there goes your socialist guard.
There's no denying that those people who were making good wages working in factories could afford to the middle class lifestyle and could suddenly afford a house and a car. The same Henry Ford paid them $5 a day, which was outrageous because he wanted them to buy the cars.
Mm-hmm.
He got it right back from
them. So what did he do? He generated the demand.
But then as he got bigger, he broke up the unions and said, well, no, I don't want any control. And he became the biggest union buster, and there's big stories about how he broke up unions and tried to fight unions and all this stuff. It's weird. In the beginning, he wanted to give them more money so they'd buy his product. But later on, all he was worried about is trying to squeeze as much revenue as he could out of each product.
So he paid them more money to buy his products, which is basically getting his money back.
Yeah, when he did in the early days, but not later on. Then he changed his philosophy 100%. So you could buy – the theory was if you pay workers more, then they've got more to spend and they'll buy your products.
But is somebody calling in?
Somebody must be trying to call in here.
But let me, I mean,
we've gone round and round.
Well,
just,
right. But I really want to talk about this from the care side, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all sitting in this room. We all voted for different people. Okay, do we agree that there is a responsibility when it comes to care? Forget about jobs. Forget about pay. Forget about pensions.
Profit.
Forget about that. Just as citizens of the same country, do we feel that there is a responsibility to provide care when it's needed? Because here's the reality. The reality is 78 million of our citizens in the next foreseeable, very short future, recent, upcoming future, are going to need to face that question. And it's going to fall on all of us. What are we going to say? We're going to say, you are responsible. Sorry, SOL. If you can't do it, then you're done. Because that's what we're kind of doing now.
Yes, that's exactly what we're going to do.
Right?
Because when it comes down to it, who's going to pay for it? I'm not going to pay for it. If you didn't save for it, and your company, didn't make enough to support yourself, or you weren't. I was lucky. I got mine. You didn't get yours. Tough luck.
Right, so we all agree that the way that it is now doesn't really answer that need, right?
Exactly.
Something needs to happen with that.
But okay. I don't think anything will.
Either
there's only three choices. Government pays for it, the people pay for it, or businesses pay for
it. Okay, so people cannot pay for it because they don't have the resources to do it.
To control the cost of it.
Okay.
They could have saved. We all could have saved more money.
So So that's off the table, kind of. Okay.
Businesses can't do it because it's too expensive and too long. You're going to live for 30 or 40 years. I'm going to pay you.
Well, you're
pension.
Talking about businesses being the insurance companies.
Right.
Okay.
They paid my aunt's insurance for 40 years.
Okay. So what? So regulations we're talking about.
Regulations.
Has to be reduced.
Right.
Okay.
Then you're talking about social. You're talking about the government stepping in and regulating the market.
But if we reduce
they're already regulating the market. That's the problem. It's raising the it's raising the cost
yes.
up.
So what?
Yes.
You cut me off. Okay, there you go.
Hang on.
Wow, man. He's we got an angry boomer in the room today. For sure. We got somebody on the line?
Yes, yes.
Okay, who's on the line?
Yes. Hi, sir. Welcome to the Red
Who's on
Life
the line?
Here.
This is Iyad Afalka.
Hi, Iyad. How are you?
I am doing great. I have 10 minutes to spare before my class starts, so I thought I...
Okay, so Paul, you got to cut him off at 5 because we cannot give Iyad ever 10 minutes.
Never 10. Okay,
no.
So you've been listening to this round debate.
Well,
let me
just set the stage. Okay, I mentioned I had some people that were friends of mine that were delegates at the Democratic National Convention.
Yes,
Iyad was one of them.
Aha.
Okay, so go ahead, Iyad, and you don't have to talk about that. I just want to.
Where do you weigh in on this discussion? We've had a 3-way discussion about somebody voted for Trump, somebody voted for Hillary, and somebody voted for. Bernie, and we're all trying to figure out what the hell happened here and what does it mean going forward for things like healthcare.
Well, what happened, we predicted what happened when at the DNC convention, the Hillary delegates, they all of a sudden they became T-Rex with short hands and they did not extend their hand enough to reach out to the Bernie delegates that they were disappointed. And they felt shunned. So what happened last night, my prediction and my analysis as someone who's an insider within the Democratic Party, it's a failure on our part as a Democratic Party because we did not reach enough to the Bernie delegates.
And the Bernie voters.
And the Bernie voters, but for the Bernie delegates, because we had more reach to influence the Bernie voters. However, is the way it has been framed is we are going back to square one, where in the elections we had to choose between the lesser of two evils. Versus, if we had like Bernie versus Trump, that would have been a clear choice for people.
Good versus evil, then.
Yeah, and I have a lot of friends.
How do you feel when you hear our guest here today, who's a lifelong Republican, admit that she might have considered Bernie? She would never have voted for. She wasn't thrilled about Trump, but she had to vote for Trump because she hated Hillary. Might have gone for Bernie.
Absolutely. This is no surprise to me, Ryan, because I had a lot of friends who happen to be Republicans, and they confessed to me. They said, well, if Trump will be the nominee, and Bernie will be the nominee of the Democratic Party. Definitely, definitely. And I saw a lot of my friends who happen to be Republicans. And I'm very proud of that fact because we are one nation and we should be like, as well, should not be divided by our philosophies. One of the things they said, we will be leaning towards Bernie and we are willing to change as Democrats just to vote for Bernie. Because that resonates with their vision for change. They're sick and tired of the status quo, and they feel he is talking to the average person.
So I apologize to you and to everybody else when I said I didn't think Bernie could had a hell's chance of beating anybody, and I thought Hillary, as a more middle-of-the-road candidate, as somebody with real experience in government at multiple levels, had a better chance.
Oh, sorry, I fall asleep. What?
Had a better chance of winning. I did. I thought she had a better chance of beating Trump than I thought Bernie had zero chance of beating Trump because of his socialist tag.
Yeah. You're off and off and off and off. Okay,
he was going to win because, you know, the corruption thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
but hold on a second. Hold on. Okay, so, Paul?
Yes.
You said something to me before we got on the air.
I said it again.
Relevant to that.
You were right. I was wrong that Bernie was a better choice.
Okay, sorry, Yad. I just had to get that in.
not just philosophically, but practically. If we wanted to win, if we wanted to stop Trump. All right, so now, here's why I'm so angry about, upset. What have we done? Trump has been elected. The person everybody thought was a joke from the beginning, in the Republican Party, in the Democratic Party, in the polls, in the media, he's now there. You obviously have a Middle Eastern accent. Do you feel nervous?
Did you just profile him on my show?
I had to.
No, I don't know what the Middle Eastern accent is. However, That's part of the Trumpian era right now. I will hear it a lot. Like,
ooh, you just got called Trumpian by Dad.
So, but you have so.
No, but I'm not calling you Trumpian. I'm just calling like this is kind of the new era we have to live with.
I'll tell you.
We saw this movie before when September 11th.
Right.
Happened today, and remember, today is 11/9, so it's kind of the flip of the September 11th. So
reverse.
This is a new era.
Oh, wow. This is
11/9.
Yes. So I hope this will be a wake up call for our nation.
But hold on yet. Okay. So you and I know each other, and I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to put you on the spot. What is the wake up call? Let's just be very pragmatic.
Yeah,
what is the wake up call? Like, we hope it's a wake up call. We hope it's a wake up call to what?
Wake up call that we are not accepting the BS that we are propagating through the Democratic Party, that we are the party of inclusivity, we are the party of diversity. Because in some local races, literally in some cities, the message was to the voters, let's make a specific city white again by supporting some white candidates versus people with foreign names who have the same credentials, the same experiences as some less qualified white candidates. So to just dump everything in the GOP, this is wrong. And as someone who has been advocating for equality and for diversity within the Democratic Party, and you might experience that firsthand with me, Raj, when I was serving in the resolutions committee.
I know you have advocated.
So this is the problem we have. The wake up call for the Democratic Party is next time they have to listen to the street, not listen to the abundance and listen to their senior leadership. Senior leadership is outdated. They think it's a bingo game in Las Vegas casinos.
Wow. So you're angry at the leadership just like the Republicans are angry at their leadership.
Yeah, but I'm not angry. I am at this moment, I am pointing fingers. And the reason why, because I
could be a lot of that going on.
I predicted this happening, and I have been known within my Democratic Party. I am a unicorn, which is I don't vote for you because you are my friend. I vote for you if you are for the people. So we were in a rush to have the first
woman president.
Woman president. But for me, I was ready for a Jewish American president.
And he's an heir.
Being ready for, which is Bernie Sanders. And then what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
Nothing. But I wanted to point that out, that it was not an uncommon thing when Bernie was running, that there was a strong appeal for a 70-year-old Jewish man with white hair from New York, okay?
Right, all of those.
With the Arab-American community.
So now I got to tell you, though, this, and I'm in all honesty. And I think
which is for, just let it settle for a minute. That's a huge thing that was accomplished during the course of this election cycle.
But the biggest part of Trump's support, if you look at the numbers, was still rural white America, the group that was supposedly not big enough to rise up and overcome his disadvantage among minorities, among Hispanics, among African Americans, among millennials, among all these other groups that were the part of the Obama coalition. They did rise up. There was a silent majority out there waiting. They did turn out record numbers in these rural areas, and they gave him bigger turnout than anybody expected, and that was enough to offset the big city votes.
But I think you're missing something, and I think it's could be very easily missed right now.
Okay.
As Chrissy's sitting in front of me, right? She does not represent that group of people,
but
that demographic. Hold on a second, Paul, right?
But she didn't elect Trump. The people in Michigan, Ohio, and
she voted for Trump.
But that's not what elected him was this white rural majority in the places where I grew up. And I'm telling you that if you think it was just about economics, you're
It
wrong.
Wasn't about economics. What I'm saying
it was
is
about
it's,
cultural
it was,
change
it was
in America.
Also not fully about white boomers in rural America. Okay, I know. I have enough of them that are not white boomers from rural America that are on my Facebook feed. Okay, and they're young. They own their own businesses, or they are very high up in certain businesses. They're entrepreneurial in nature. They live in our own backyards here, Paul, right? And they voted for Trump, and they supported Trump for the call it the business side of it, whatever it is. So it would be a big mistake, okay, to assume that as these white ruler boomers that are in their 60s or whatever,
right,
that within 20 years or 10 years, that's not going to be a factor anymore, because there is equal disillusionment, anger, and frustration with the status quo of politics as usual.
I agree,
that
but I think you're underestimating
a millennial generation.
Rod, I'm gonna say this because I have to go.
Yes.
I'm teaching a class in 3 minutes. One thing I when I woke up this morning, I only had 3 hours and 36 hours. I only had 3 hours of sleep in 36 hours. This is how much was a stressful process for me. And I'm so glad it's Wednesday, and I'm glad it's the day after the elections.
Because we're over the hump.
Draining.
Yeah.
However, this morning when I woke up, when I opened my eyes, I felt the pain of white America in 2008. This is how they woke up when Obama was elected.
Yes.
Today, it's payback time.
That's very, very profound.
We woke up having the same feeling, the same remorse,
same fear,
same guilt, and this is very profound in a way that it did not hit me until I woke up and seeing the news saying President Trump.
So it's business as usual.
Reality. However, we have seen this movie before. We lived under Bush before. The most important thing, it's a wake up call for all communities in a way. Where this is the time we need to start organizing. This is the time we have to start building institutions that empower people, educate people about the issues. We don't have to wait for the next 4 year cycle. We don't have to wait till the 2 years midterm elections. We have to raise awareness.
Also, what the Republican Party did on day one after Obama, and so
start rebuilding.
Right. No. So exactly. So here's the thing. Right. Did we have record voter turnout this year?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did.
Okay. Did we have an over? Even though it was like a friggin' grudge match that would never end. Okay, it was like a for 2 years. Okay, did we have more or less a steady involvement and engagement of a lot of people?
Sure.
In record numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all of
that is a positive.
Yes,
it is.
Hopefully, unless they feel disillusioned.
However, Rod, we had our moment in June, and we have our chance, and we did not capitalize on that.
Yeah, but that's chances and moments like that, Iyad, again, is, and we are all human beings, and we have a tendency to fall into this trap. We look at things in a snapshot. This is not a snapshot.
We have to build on that. I told people this morning through some chat. I told them, let's turn our fear in passion, and let's turn our passion into action, and let's just stop whining and do something about it.
Can I ask you one? I'm going to make this real quick because I know you got to. Can I just ask you three quick questions? Is Trump going to try and build a wall and kick out Mexicans? Yes or no?
I don't think so.
Okay.
This is one of the things people they miss on.
Okay, I got it. Yes or no.
Okay, yes or no.
These are just no to the wall.
Yeah.
No
to
that one.
I told you. Yeah, you gotta keep on check.
Okay, yes or no. All right, just yes or no. So you don't think he's going to do that? Nobody else here does either. But I'm telling you, my friends in the Midwest are banking on it.
Okay.
Number two. Is he going to erect trade barriers to try and punish companies who take jobs overseas? Protectionism.
Well, he's a protectionist. As someone who's teaching business for a living, I have to tell you, all the criteria show that he's a protectionist. He proposed tariffs and taxes to make sure that we are not getting to protect.
Is that a bad thing?
Yes. So yes, you think he'll do that? Okay. So we might start a trade war.
That'll be a good thing for America, and that'll be a shutdown actually for Obama's support of the TPP.
So what you're hearing is he's okay with trade barriers.
Yes.
He's okay with protection.
I'm just trying to get a snapshot.
Right.
And number three. Is he going to, with this new Republican Congress, are they going to repeal Obamacare?
Well, that's something on stake. They tried 50 times to repeal Obamacare.
I know, but they got all three branches now. Yeah.
Yes, but the three branches, they are not as important as the strike of a pin from the president.
So do you think they're going to appeal Obamacare?
Is he going to push to appeal Obamacare?
I don't think so, because there's the 22 million Americans that will be affected.
So, I got it. We're just looking for yes or no.
No, and the reason why, because it had to go to the Supreme Court. And normally in policies, laws could be repealed if someone get harmed. So far, since the implementation of Obamacare in 2009, nobody died because of Obamacare. Nobody got hurt.
But you understand, sir, that everybody who voted for him in those rural districts in Michigan, Ohio, and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, where he won, they are counting on the fact that he's going to repeal Obamacare. They're counting on the fact he's going to build a wall, and they're counting on the fact that he's going to put up protection. And if he doesn't do all three of those, they will turn on him.
Surprise, surprise. These rural...
white voters, right.
Residents, white
voters.
They are benefiting from Obamacare, so they are shooting themselves.
No. I'm telling you.
I have to disagree with the benefiting from Obamacare.
Okay. I don't know if they benefit.
Here's the thing, okay? Let's just keep it at the repeal or not, okay? They're not going to repeal. I say they're not going to repeal. Paul?
I say he is.
He is going to repeal.
Absolutely.
Chrissy?
I hope he repeals.
Okay, so then here's the follow-up question, because I'm not letting you guys off the hook,
right.
Okay? All right.
Yeah.
What happens if he repeals? What do you want to see in place? Because we were just talking about the need for care that is basically at a dire need and is only going to get worse. So when they repeal Obamacare, when they repeal whatever equivalent of some sort of coverage, health coverage,
right.
Okay? What do we want to see in place? Do we see nothing in place? Do we just allow – hold on a second, Paul. I'm asking Chrissy because you said maybe yes, maybe no. Okay, I'll ask both of you. You're saying I hope they repeal.
Right.
Do you hope that they put something else in its place?
Yes.
And what would you hope that that would do?
To simplify, that's difficult.
Okay, but would it still be providing coverage?
Yeah. I think it has to start with... has to start with the... We do need to regulate the price of the pharmaceutical company.
So we are in agreement that the cost of healthcare is high.
Extremely high.
And something has to happen. And here's a person who works in the industry. Now, that is not very far from what you believe, Paul, right?
But I'm telling you that my friends...
Hold on a second.
No, but you guys aren't hearing me. In the Midwest, the people who put him over the top don't want to replace it with anything, nothing, zero.
So they want to continue to pay high medical costs.
They have the illusion that government is evil and anything that government provides is bad.
And how quickly is that illusion going to be shattered when their bills start coming through the door for their costs as they get older?
Decades. It'll take a long, long time. They will not... If they were voting their economic interests, like your friend was saying, they would not have voted for Donald Trump.
So you're saying that people that basically vote with their pocketbooks down at the end of the day are not voting with their pocketbooks?
Correct.
That's a very interesting assumption.
Correct.
I have to tell you something.
This is cultural.
But I have to tell you something here. As someone who did the healthcare policy residential in Washington, D.C., where I have to study both sides, I have to sit with both sides with open mind, open ears, open eyes, and sit with people from the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, which is like a nonpartisan. I have to tell you, it takes a long time to come up with something like Obamacare, and GOP is not ready for that.
No.
The reason why? Because they never have an equivalent beneficial alternative that will appeal to the people.
Well, they got to come up with one now.
No, they don't. That's what you guys miss. If they repeal it and simply talk about it for a decade, that will be fine with the people in the Midwest.
Not when people start dying from lack of coverage.
It'll take 10 years for that to...
But people are dying of lack of coverage because they're not able to afford the... You know, they have to pay for the insurance, and now they have to pay for these extremely high co-pays.
And drugs. And
going back to my situation. Now, for me, I'm a single mom.
Right.
I have, now when I have to go get my blood work, we talked about, it's $4 to get it, and I have my results by the end of the day. Now it's different. I have $35 to $50 to pay for my copay every time I go to the doctors.
Mm-hmm, right.
Then I have to go get my blood test. That's another $35. Then I have to go back to the doctors.
Right. Because he's the gatekeeper. Right.
That's another copay. And then I have to go back to the pharmacy. It's almost a week. I almost spend so much time, and then it's the cost of
And I'm telling you that's
so you'd like to see.
I have a response for this. So what did you do before you got Obamacare? What was your alternative? Can you share with me?
Yeah, I had insurance
through your company.
Through the company.
Employer insurance.
Exactly. Employer insurance.
Exactly.
But my copay was not as much.
Sure, because employers had more power to negotiate.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's where we have something called corporate welfare, that we have to curb that corporate welfare, and that's why we can allocate the resources to people like you. You don't have to have that.
One thing, Raj,
I have to mention this, then I have to go back to my class. I'm about 10 minutes late.
Yes.
One thing I want to share with you, maybe whoever sold you that Obamacare or that insurance plan, they did not tell you there's a cost-sharing subsidy from the government, so this way you don't have to pay that $35 or $50. Maybe you did not talk to your tax advisor who told you there is tax benefits that you could the $35, the $50, that's now you.
Yeah, but not everybody qualifies for that. If you're in a middle income or middle to upper income, you don't qualify for that.
Right, and I don't.
Exactly.
But I'm still struggling as a single mom.
Thank you. We got to go.
Good luck with the class.
All right.
Me.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah, okay. So,
you know, I do have a hard stop at 2 here. I know everybody got to go.
No, that's fine. Okay. So
I'm willing to do, because we took away her time. We got to get her to come back and talk about.
Well, no,
what
I think this was actually very productive, because at the end of the day, if it shows anything, is that even though it was over 2 years, the process that we were fed, I heard very little policy over 2 years. Can we all agree that there was very little policy discussion over 2 years?
It was
personality campaign and not really policy campaign.
I can't tell
campaign.
You if Obamacare is good or bad, because I don't really understand it. I know it was an attempt to control costs and to extend coverage. I don't think it did either well.
Right. Okay, so let's not pretend that it is the ultimate solution, no. Right? But we also have spent 2 years, and this show actually was good in one way, that we talked about the complexity of this stuff, of which one of the most critical things that we're facing as a country is the healthcare situation, whether it's from a cost of provision or whether it's from a lack of enough coverage or the right kind of coverage, or the fact that we have an aging population that's going to need all the assistance, because I don't think we are, none of us sitting in this room or anybody who really votes, is an uncaring person that would basically leave somebody who is in need of care just to basically fend for themselves. If they can't, we would try to do something. And I think that's where the energy and the focus needs to go. And we have spent so much energy basically just fighting against, no, your plan is not good enough, and I don't want to tell you what my plan is because I can't really get it because you'll say no to it, and all this stuff, and enough is enough.
Let me make this point.
I think it becomes a battle of egos at some point.
It is.
But if we all look at the same, we all want the same goal.
Right, right.
And how we get there is very complex.
But here's what's
But when it comes, really comes down to it, where our society is a very much an entitlement in society.
Right.
You owe me this. The government owes me that. The thing about it is,
she's looking at you as a boomer for some reason.
Because she's nailed what I've been trying to get across to you guys. You think it's all just that they're all going to vote their pocketbook, and when they realize that Obamacare left and there's nothing that replaced it, that they'll demand something. No, they won't. Because they're convinced that we don't want to be an entitlement society. They're Midwesterners. They're brought up to take care of themselves. The churches are supposed to step in. Charities are supposed to step in. Families are supposed to step in.
And Paul, I think you just hit it right there. We've become so entitled, and it's a community effort. You know, when I was in India,
Are
you sitting here telling me that the baby boomer generation doesn't feel entitled?
Oh, of course we do.
Okay. It's all about you.
Of course.
Okay. Right, we've said it on this show.
But even more so in the
Midwest. So how do you deal with a petulant child that basically wants everything and wants it now?
Well, we're going to find out, because that's us.
At some point, when you don't get what you want, what do you do, Paul?
You cry and you scream and you throw.
And then what do you do?
The wall.
Nobody comes around.
Exactly, and you wonder why.
Your assumption is that this is really a deep point. Why has the Republican Party not put forth a plan? Is it just because they can't come up with one? As your guest is saying, it's complicated and whatever. Is it because their plan really was the Obama plan and now they don't have a backup, which is partly true too? They haven't come up with a plan because their base, the rural, white, uneducated, not college educated, working class people who don't have much time, energy, or experience dealing with these kind of complicated issues, have been sold this notion that government can't be the answer. Right?
And they've swallowed it with all the food that they've also gotten with food stamps and
all the subsidies. Social Security they get to support them and all the Medicare they get and that they would never give up. That's the insanity of this. They will not accept any sort of government program in place at all. They're going to look to let's make us less of an entitled society, even if it hurts them.
Okay, so we're almost out of time.
You don't believe that, but that's really
how they feel. No, I do believe it, but I also believe that there's an end to that. And the end is going to be very harsh, but it's going to be an end. Because, again...
It's going to be people starving and dying.
It's a lot easier to...
Well, I mean, it was happening before.
It's happening before, and it'll happen again. So they're not expecting the government to supply that
answer. Look at Canada, for example, and their social medicine.
Right.
People who need surgeries that isn't life-threatening wait years.
Right. Absolutely. But you do that in an HMO, too, a private HMO. If you're in Kaiser, you don't get... You have to go through the system, and Kaiser is trying to keep the cost down. So they try and defer and delay and decide that maybe you don't need this right away or right now. That's what an HMO does today, and which is the cheapest form of insurance.
Because it's driven by minimizing costs, not providing the primary directive is not providing the best quality of care.
Because it's
actually minimizing costs
it's
and
for
providing
profit.
Maximizing
profit.
And if they would actually provide best quality of care, they can minimize their costs.
But that's the sustainable plan that I'm talking about. Most people do not think in that manner. And what was the the way why you could get away with it is because when was the last time we had all three branches under one
Obama
party? First term.
Right.
Right. For a split second.
Which is why he got Obamacare through, otherwise it would never pass.
So here's the thing. We are either going to have a reflection of exactly what happened in the first 2 years between 2000 and 2010.
We will.
Right? And if that's the case, Paul, if we actually have exactly a repeat scenario and 10 years from now we're basically looking at a reversal of exactly a pendulum swinging the other side, then what does that tell you about the country's system of government?
It's going to swing back and forth and back and forth until something breaks.
So what does but how long has that been being told? 400 years?
No, it's I haven't seen it this divided since the Civil War. It feels like this.
Wow, you're that old.
I'm really old. I just see the great.
Chrissy, I'm sorry, I stole your punchline.
No, it doesn't remind. I'm a big student of history. It reminds me of the 1850s when they used to literally fight on the floor of Congress and have duels and shoot each other and fight. I mean, it has that kind of. Because here's the difference: we've always disagreed. We didn't see each other as evil. Before the Civil War, the South and the North saw each other as evil. You're not just wrong. You're evil. If you're evil, I can't compromise with you. Right now, we've been fed, I think through talk media primarily, but through both political parties, that the other side is evil. Trump isn't wrong. He's evil. Hillary wasn't wrong. She was corrupt. She was evil, basically. The Democrats aren't. Socialized medicine isn't just a bad idea. It's evil. And once you build into people that the other side is evil, you cannot compromise with evil. And if you do, then you immediately get shot down. So until we get over that notion that the other side is evil and that compromise is bad, we will go back and forth until this thing breaks.
So here's, and this, thank you for setting me up.
Right.
Okay.
That's what I'm here for.
Okay. In a good way. Okay. But so where do we go from here? Right.
I fear that we're going to go back into a bad, bad, dark period for another couple of years, even worse than the ones we've been through, because this time they're not just going to try and stop Trump, they're going to try and impeach him, just as they would have with Hillary.
Well, they tried it with Bill Clinton, and they still didn't get exactly the satisfaction out of it.
That's been the fear since the founders set up this vague document called impeachment. There's no process listed how to do it, so they had to make it up both times they tried it. There is no procedure. There's how you introduce evidence, how long the trial is. And everything. All we know is the Supreme Court justice presides and the Senate votes on it. If this simply becomes like a parliamentary system where every time you don't like the guy, you impeach him and kick him out, then we'll turn into a parliamentary system where they'll have new elections every 6 months and we'll go through governments like, you know, candy here. That was never the intent of the founding fathers. It was just there as a sort of a catch-all. If somebody really loses their mind and is treasonous or does a crime, we got to get rid of them.
We need a clause in there to activate.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're now moving in that direction. We have since Nixon, and each side tries to do it. The Democrats tried to push Nixon out, right or wrong. Then the Republicans tried to push out Clinton, right or wrong. Had Hillary won, they would have surely started impeachment proceedings very quickly with her there. And with Trump, if he does anything wild or crazy, they're going to do the same thing.
Well,
I have a question, though.
Go ahead.
Do you think Trump is actually going to be able to indict her?
No.
If he doesn't, my friends in the Midwest will say he's a phony, you lied to us, because you said plainly, build a wall, lock her up, bring jobs back, and wipe out ISIS.
And he's going to say, I need more time to untangle the corrupt nature of government and institutionalized bureaucracy.
He will slit his throat.
And it's not my fault that I didn't deliver on that hotel project in time and under budget because somebody else's fault was involved.
And yet, as we know, if he did, let's say he does try and indict her, and let's say there is groom, and there could be, because she clearly violated some laws and some other stuff that other people have gone to prison for secrets and stuff. They could probably make that case. If they did, if we establish the precedent that you lock up your opponent, we either turn into third world dictatorships, or where we threaten each other with, I'm going to get you afterwards. Or look what happened with Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon, the forgotten man, Gerald Ford, who knew that the country couldn't, as horrible as Richard Nixon was, I'm sorry to say, and as much as they had on him, the country could not bear to see a leader get thrown in jail. It would. And the same reason that Obama didn't go after Cheney or Bush for lying about the Iraq war and leading us into a war that was false, without merit. There's something about that trial that is so horrible that it would tear the country apart. I don't think they care anymore, and I think both sides are ready to try and tear the country apart.
Okay, because
the two sides hate each other, they're evil.
Okay, so you are still unjaded. Even though you're older than I am, you're not as jaded as I am, right? Because there's an aspect of humanity, okay? And I accept it. I accept that there's a good side of humanity and a bad side of humanity, and they both coexist,
We're
right?
dealing in the bad, dark side.
No, but they coexist at all times, okay? In the state of California today, if you go buy groceries, they're going to charge you 10 cents for a plastic bag.
Right.
Because that law passed, okay? But you can walk out there and, being disgruntled, light up a marijuana and recreationally smoke it. So, the duality of life exists on a daily basis, right?
Well, and that's
at the end of the day, it really comes down with what you can control and what you have control and power over and what you don't. And we have been, I will say it again, being engaged as we have been, involved in the process as we have been, regardless which way we swung, which way we thought, which way we felt, ideologically or otherwise, I will take that situation over an apathetic, disengaged population of voters any day.
I don't know, because we've got an angry mob. If you look at I studied American history a lot. If you look at the founders, the one thing they were afraid of was mobs, angry mobs. They really did believe in an enlightened elite that was supposed to run the country because they were knowledgeable and they'd studied this stuff and they sort of trusted that they would naturally be picked. They were afraid of mobs.
Okay.
That's why they created the Senate and other institutions like that. So it wasn't just – that's why they created the Electoral College. That's why they did everything. So it wasn't just mob rule.
So, but all of that, Paul?
They're frightened by
on
that.
The nine, frightened. On the
I think we're in mob rule.
On 11-9, okay, we have a choice of how we proceed individually. Right?
I'm leaving.
Well, no. For the rest of us that are not leaving, I want to share something with you guys that I wrote this morning. Okay.
And this will have to be it because I got another show.
And this is I wrote this. I had a hard time. I struggled. I felt all the whole array of feelings that everybody's felt. I don't think I felt elated by the results. I felt more upset than anything. That we kind of put ourselves and the country through this. But again, once that initial feeling went away, I realized that this is also part of the process. There's a reason why. Okay, so the morning after, this thing is titled The Morning After. Okay, regardless of your personal politics or whether or not we agreed on the candidates or the issues or the solutions to all that ails us, today we can all find solidarity in our shared exhaustion. Okay? These past few months have been costly for many of us. People have alienated themselves from neighbors, reopened scarred over emotional wounds, widened family fault lines in some cases, perhaps created new tensions where we work, severed ties with friends on social media en masse, which if you're like me, I have 5,000 people. It allowed me to add more people because I was at capacity, okay. But that's a second, that's a beside the point. And for many of us, we've probably seen relationships that really matter to us altered maybe forever. Hopefully not. We have acquired this exhaustion together. We have done so in the messy, disoriented, violent tempest of almost 2 years. 2 years. Yes, we are tired, and yet it is a good tired. The kind of tired you are when you give a damn about something so worth giving a damn about. My fellow exhausted friends, be encouraged today. This exhaustion is the cost of speaking our truth. There is no easy way of enjoying the fruits of freedom other than to fight for them. Fought for across kitchen tables and cul-de-sacs and along church pews and on social media profiles and in awkward gatherings with extended family members you wish you didn't know so much about and now do. This fight is a sweet spot of America. This is where the greatness lives. We didn't fight to make our country great. We fought because it already is great. Today is the day after Election Day. You're still going to be responsible for who you are, for the relationships you nurture, for the way you spend your time and your money, for what you teach your children, for the way you respond to injustice, for the eyes through which you see other people. You're going to still fully own you and the choices you make, no matter what happened last night. You'll still have your faith, convictions, and those things you claim to believe about this life, and the space and time to prove it. The day after Election Day, we soberly realize, without any hyperbole, that we are America, and that our lives will either leave it a more or less loving, beautiful, and compassionate place than when we arrived. That's not to say that the day before doesn't matter, or that you should remove yourself from the process or stay silent on the way there. Be present, be passionate always. Say everything you feel called to say, and vote the content of your heart always. But the greatest mistake you could ever make is either believing that hope is lost or that salvation is secured simply because of what transpires on Election Day. No human being gives you life meaning or renders it meaningless. You get to decide that with your voice, your hands, your words, and your breath. The day after Election Day will be the most important day of your life today, because you will get to decide how to live it. So go live it on your terms, for today is simply the day after Election Day, and not the day we stop being the engaged and vigilant fighters for our freedoms. We all have known for a long time now that regardless of the outcome, half of the country today would mourn and half would feel glee. And then, as we also know from life's lessons, that glow and gloom fades fast and reality sets in pretty quick. And it is at that moment when we all will be truly tested. So let us take a deep breath, and though exhausted, still bravely go forth and take on that day.
Awesome.
With that, we're going to wrap up here. How do we get in touch with your company? And we got to get you back, because this was unfair. Just a lot. You came here to talk about
your people,
services and everything else.
Website,
and we brought you in as a spokesman for a whole group that you didn't even want to represent here. But
I appreciated her input. I think as an insider in the industry, and also given her position on the election.
I'll tell you what I learned. And
we stop talking to one another, we're not going to get any solutions.
I'll tell you what I learned out of this. One, that Bernie would have been a stronger candidate and might have won over some of those angry people, because they shared the same part of the same anger. I don't think they would have won over the cultural angry people who are afraid that the country is moving in a direction they don't like. It's too diversified. It's moving gay marriage and other sorts of things. They just don't like that whole thing. But it might have reached this economic argument, or this corruption argument, that it's all skewed. And I'm still stunned that women didn't turn out, that didn't feel the same tribal urge to elect the first woman, whoever it was, that didn't overpower them, no matter what she was like.
No, not at all.
Yeah, because it obviously did with other groups, I mean, in the past.
Yeah.
John Kennedy was not a perfect person, but everybody was going to vote for him, by God, if you're Irish Catholic, just to make sure we got one in office here, right?
So I think the younger generation is dissolving from that mentality.
They are.
Worldwide.
Stunning how that tribalism has disappeared.
There's a huge generational shift going on. I think we will probably not see
this generation that ran for office this year.
Oh, this is the end
ever.
Of the baby boomer.
I think
boomers,
this is the end of the baby boomer era. Mm-hmm. I think the composition of people, that's why I said, you know, be aware that this is not just limited to baby boomers, but I think the composition of complexities of people's lives that are you know, Gen Xers and millennials, it's going to make for different kind of candidates.
Yes. Tell us how to get a hold of your company. Just put a plug in quickly.
Yes. American All Care Services. You can reach us on the web at AmericanAllCareServices.com.
And at least you prove that you're willing to talk about it. So I automatically want to call you guys, because you must be caring and giving and loving if you're willing to talk about this and come into this turmoil. And here you think you're coming to talk about your company.
I'm so proud of all of our nurses and our caregivers. They do truly have a heart of compassion. And it's a family-owned business, and everybody involved is the neatest people, even despite our differences.
Well, you're a neat person for talking with us and putting in. I'm just so angry today, and so many of us are so unsure of where this is going, if there's hope, as Rad's trying to.
There's always hope.
I hope so. All right. Thank you so much.
On that note, everybody, thanks for joining us. Chrissy, thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope it was okay.
An experience. It was perfect.
Okay. And we'll have
insight's
you back.
Always good.
And we'll have you. Well, I think, you know, if anything, everybody out there is, don't stop talking to one another.
Exactly.
As difficult as the issues are, we are better for having those conversations.
Here we go.
We'll
see
you next week.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.